What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Smack Hospitality Podcast. And this episode features Adam Crocini, the Senior Vice President of Global Design for Wellness and Food and Beverage at Hilton. And we recorded this episode live at the World of Taste event, the F&D conference at the Hilton Bomonti in Istanbul. Adam and I talked about his career, how his time with Wolfgang Puck affected and shaped his career at Hilton today, what his involvement with the CIA is, and what it boils down to when we talk about food and beverage and wellness in the future. Enjoy the show. Adam.
How are we doing?
Welcome to Smack. Thanks for being here. Taste of Hilton event in Istanbul at the Hilton Bomonti. Thank you for joining us. Time is precious, I hear. There's a gala evening that you have to get to.
Suited and booted, as they say.
Yes, exactly. Adam, I'm going to start with a very easy one, if you don't mind. Would you briefly explain kind of your role at Hilton at the moment, what it entitles, the responsibilities you have, before I dive into the deep end with you and have all the dirty questions ready?
Oh, boy. All right, start with the easy thing. Right now, I am currently the Senior Vice President, Global Head of Design, Food and Beverage, and Wellness. So our team easily said that we are in charge of products, programs, and experiences across all 24 brands in those three categories, as aforementioned.
So then let's get into it. If we talk about design, the inevitable question that comes to mind is everyone wants a cool hotel these days. Mm-hmm. The whole idea of experiential travel is around, and everybody, you know, is talking about this whole idea of creating an experience. Granted, that might be easier in some hotels than in others. We can all safely agree on that. Walk me through how kind of that, the responsibilities that you have in your role now, how has that developed over time? Because if you would have talked to somebody about design maybe 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. he would have said, that's great, but talk to me about revenue first. That conversation might, revenue is still important. Don't get me wrong. If it doesn't make sense for the bottom line, it's crap. But there is an element now where these design elements play a much bigger factor. Would you agree?
I would. I mean, I think, you know, the revenue part is still wildly important. But I think the realization that if you don't have the right design, the right food and beverage programming, the right spa experiences, well, you're never going to see the revenue that you want. So I think the ownership community and the customers have told our ownership community and society has changed to the point that design is such a critical part about how we position our hotels in the markets. We have 24 brands in Hilton. Yeah. Each one of those brands has a very specific customer set that we target, and we listen to them. We talk to them on a regular basis to try to understand what is it that they're looking for from that particular brand. And we curate that brand experience, not only, I would say, maybe holistically as a positioning, but also regionally to ensure that that particular brand shows up in that marketplace for that customer. Waldorf Astoria, Seychelles, is very different than the Waldorf Astoria Dubai DIFC, as an example, because our customers are different. They're the same type of customer, but they're there for different reasons and different stay occasions.
If you look at design, and we'll start with the wellness element, something, you know, whether we call it wellness or well-being or per se that idea of, well-being, I guess. Walk me through some of the things that you see are very relevant in that space at the moment, because that's also changed. The whole idea of, you know, when people consume well-being, we've got this whole idea of pleasure that's floating around. So, you know, people travelers that might come to you guys from the Hilton Honors program that travel for business, they might stay on for the weekend, bring a wife and the kids and so on and so forth for an extended stay. So walk me through the whole idea of well-being and what you're trying to do. I realize it's probably complicated because there's 24 brands and you might be doing something different with DoubleTree than with Waldorf Astoria, clearly. But what are some of the things that you've seen in that space?
Well, I mean, wellness is a very broad topic now. Post-COVID, I think it's a topic that's top of mind for everyone, and it does show up differently for different people. The way that we're looking at it at Hilton, most importantly, is how people sleep.
Yeah.
What does that experience look like? How people take care of their body, and whether that's in a fitness experience, whether that's meditation and quiet time in your room. And so how do those things impact your day-to-day life? Mm-hmm. What's your routine like at home?
Yeah.
And how do we make sure that we keep that routine for you as much as we can when you visit our hotels?
Yeah.
That's from making the food that we serve fresher, lighter, healthier, better for you. The snacks that we offer in our retail, same approach, lighter, fresher, better for you.
Are you getting rid of the Mars bar? Can we?
So you know, I think
that might cause problems.
There is an audience for that, and we respect that. But we also see, though, you know, in the Americas at least, I could give you a fun stat, which is that we took away in one of our brands called Homewood Suites, so an extended stay brand. We took away 100 different SKUs from the retail section and replaced them all with better for you, fresher, healthier snacks.
Okay.
So instead of 12 flavors of Doritos, who knew there were even so many? We got down to 2 flavors of Doritos, and then we put in seaweed chips, and we put in, you know, air fried, you know, vegetable chips and things like this. Seaweed chips has now become the number one selling snack food in Homewood Suites. And Doritos is now the last. And so I think people are changing. Now, you still want, listen, I'm a sucker for M&Ms every now and then.
Good man, Adam.
So, but, you know, you got to have balance. Mm-hmm. And you also, you know, you want to also evolve and continue to change for the customer. That's as they change, we need to change with them. And I think that is where we have been very proactive at Hilton over the last 5 years. In really listening to our customer, seeing what's happening in the marketplace, and making sure that we're staying ahead of what their needs are, or making sure we're there for them and we're meeting them where they are, whether it's wellness or food and beverage experiences or how they want their rooms to look and feel when they show up.
Let's talk about the U.S. traveler for a second, because obviously a lot of your business is in the U.S. and then we'll talk about the rest of the world. And obviously you have, you know, some focus that you're putting in other parts of the world as well. But let's talk about the American traveler for a second. Walk me through kind of the evolution of the American traveler in the last kind of 10 years from your perspective, from the design and the wellness perspective. I would assume he or she has gotten a little bit more sophisticated in what they're looking for, a little bit more specific also in what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. And tell me how you guys are adapting to that, because I imagine that's quite difficult from super eco hotels to ultra luxury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. Here's what we see: our customers are looking for, you know, dare I say the word, lifestyle vibe.
Yeah.
In every single brand.
Yeah.
And that could be at a Hampton all the way up to a Waldorf Astoria. And so, what does that mean really when you kind of distill that down into design and start with that? They want texturally rich experiences. From the look and the feel of the spaces to the sounds that they hear to the smells in the air. When they walk into a restaurant, they want it to be vibrant. They want it to be rich. They almost want it to be maximalist if that is the experience that they want to create. Or if they go to a sushi restaurant, they want to experience like they would in Tokyo, which was super simplicity, right? Minimalist at the highest level. Why? Because these guests are so well traveled now. And, you know, if you look back 20 plus years ago to today, the guests that are traveling today, they've been a lot more places. They've gone to different parts around the world. They're seeking out secondary and tertiary markets that have really interesting food and beverage, museums, art, culture. And so their exposure has informed them about what they're looking for. And that's starting to play into what they expect out of brands, including the food and beverage, you know, cuisine and different types of cuisine, especially in the Americas, which were one of the most diverse parts of the world, right? Yet, we didn't have very strong presence of different cuisines in a lot of different markets, maybe LA, San Francisco, Miami, New York. But you can go to Montana now, and this restaurant just got, the one I'm thinking about called Sean, just got nominated for a James Beard in the middle of Montana. It is authentic, pure Thai cuisine.
Very cool.
That is wildly successful. It popped up out of nowhere. And the couple moved from Bangkok. I happen to know them from my time living in Asia.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, Montana has a destination Thai restaurant. I would never have said that to you maybe even 5 years ago.
Good for Montana.
Good for Montana. But society's changing.
Sure.
People are well-traveled, more well-healed in this space. And their expectations are higher. So we're just seeing this unbelievable fabric of food and beverage starting to show up across the United States with people that are understanding what they're looking for and understand the quality.
If we look at the U.S. traveler, is there anything that you're seeing in the U.S. that perhaps you're not seeing in other parts of the world? Is there something that comes to mind where you say that's really still fairly specific to the U.S. traveler, or perhaps to the traveler coming to the U.S. because he's looking, and we're not going to slander Dorito any harder, but because he's looking maybe for that, you know, for that great burger or something that is perhaps associated with the American, you know, traditions of F&B. Is there something like that, or is it really this you know, the fact, and I totally follow you, that the fact that the world is now better traveled and more traveled, and it's mm-hmm. easier and also cheaper perhaps to travel mm-hmm. from A to B in some cases anyways, that affects, you know, what our understanding of F&B, because again, 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the Thai cuisine might have not been as popular because, frankly, not that many people knew about it.
Sure.
That's the reality.
I think what we're seeing is, in my opinion, because I lived there
right.
for 10 years yeah. in Asia Pacific, I think everything kind of starts in America.
Yeah.
I would think London is right there with us.
Yeah.
Dubai has very quickly, because caught you up. Can there, caught up.
Yeah, yeah.
However, Asia Pacific is trailing, and it seems like the patterns of what happens in Europe and in the United States mm-hmm. then take hold in Asia Pacific. And I say this specifically in the food and beverage space. Mm-hmm. If you look at hotels in Asia Pacific, hotels still reign supreme as the destinations for yeah. restaurants and fine dining. However, markets like Singapore, Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Seoul are starting to see independent boutique restaurants showing up, not even in the main CBD, mm. but outside the city in residential neighborhoods, yeah. which the people that were coming down into the CBD or going to the luxury hotels, they no longer have to leave their neighborhood. Mm. They could just walk out their front door.
Yeah.
And so that feels very much like yeah, what's yeah. been happening in the United States. And I think over the next few years, we'll start to see this demand from the marketplace on these independent restaurants. Mm-hmm. And as talent starts to grow in these markets that have been educated and brought up maybe in the hotel, food and beverage world, hone their skills, mm. moved around a little bit. Yeah. Now they're like, they're ready
yeah.
to go do their own thing. They yeah. built a little bit of reputation for themselves. And so I think what our responsibility now at Hilton is to ensure that we don't feel what happened to us over the last few years in the hotel industry, which was the independents move so fast and sure. we're such a big organization. It's not just us, yeah. but our competitors as well.
Yeah.
Some catching up to do in that space. And so now the Asia Pacific, we're really focused on ensuring that the concepts that we're delivering to our hotels, like we are all over the world, but really that we're making sure that they are really forward-thinking, super dynamic, market relevant, pushing boundaries, so that we're staying ahead of what's happening yeah. in the independent space so that we can hold our position.
Yeah. Tell me this, with the buzz that's currently around lifestyle, and you mentioned it when you were speaking at the beginning, Adam, there's clearly a buzz in the hotel business around lifestyle, right? If we look at all the, you guys, your competitors, you know, Accor, who's got Ennismore, and they're obviously, you know, doing their thing. You know, Marriott is, you know, very much invested in the whole idea of lifestyle as well. You just mentioned it as well. Is there a risk, in your opinion, of lifestyle, what's a good word to use here, diverting the attention away from something like wellness? Because mm-hmm. I think there's an honest question that we can ask here. Does wellness and lifestyle really go hand in hand? Because with wellness, what are you buying? You're buying tranquility, you know, a certain calmness. With lifestyle, you're buying the buzz, the vibe, and so on and so forth. How do you see that? Does one exclude the other, or does one, you know, pose a risk for the other?
I think the opposite, actually. I think that particular category,
yeah.
they're very much aligned, because uh-huh. if you think about the customer that you're yeah. typically targeting, that demographic, it trends younger.
Yeah.
Again, changes in society have informed that particular guest. Take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Work out.
Yeah.
Eat better.
Yeah.
Meditation
yeah.
and mental wellness is really important to that particular demographic, probably more than anyone else. Your Zillennials,
yeah.
your Gen Alphas coming. Mental wellness is really important. So they want all of the experience,
yeah.
but they also know it's really important for them to take good care of themselves and, you know, turn on the Calm app when they go to yeah. our rooms and meditate before they go to bed, or have some wellness moments with our Peloton in-room app in the morning where you don't have to go to the gym, but you can do some stretching, you do some light yoga. And so I think that is a hand in hand.
Very good.
And I don't think that they really oppose each other at all.
Give me a rundown on Hilton F&B, and we'll come to wellness in a second. What's in the pipeline? What can we expect to come? Then, as your colleague Amber, who's shout out to Amber sitting outside, hi, saying don't share too much, but share what you can. Give me some of the things that are a priority for you guys at the moment, and without getting us in trouble with Amber.
Yep. Well, let's see. From a hotel development side, we'll talk about that because, you know, partnerships is really important to us. Yep. Our customers also expect that in different categories, shapes and sizes. You know, I think most exciting for us is the Waldorf Astoria New York.
Yeah.
The greatest of them all, as it was once called and still is today by anyone in the hotel industry. The Astoria New York has gone under a multi-billion dollar remodel.
Yeah.
We've taken that hotel from 1,000 keys to 365 keys. Wow. We've added 370-ish residential towers. So really took a third of the hotel and bifurcated that into the two other types of residences and hotel rooms that we have. We have three incredible food and beverage venues. Mm-hmm. We have the Park Avenue terraces, which again, these spaces are very storied. And if you look at the archives, rich of history and the people who dine there and the things that happen in that particular hotel. So we've preserved Park Avenue terraces and the Peacock Alley. Park Avenue terraces is going to be programmed with a Japanese tea garden inspired theme, if you will. So thinking about the art of Japanese pastries and the quality that you get there. Mm-hmm. So the high tea experience in the Park Avenue terraces will be just in that vein, and we'll have a sake menu, and we'll have an omakase tasting menu without having to go through an entire omakase.
Okay.
So light, fresh, clean, incredibly high-end ingredients and products that will serve sake, champagne, caviar, and a high tea.
Very cool.
Peacock Alley, we brought in Jeff Bell from Please Don't Tell in New York City, world's 50 best bar, one of the, I guess you'd say, the OGs of New York cocktail scene. Brilliant gentleman, incredible cocktails, and he is really taking the Waldorf Astoria bar book, which is used at almost every single quality bar around the globe. They have that somewhere behind their bar in their library for sure. And we're going to reinvent that and bring it up to the modern day while still preserving the classics that came out of that particular location. And then our signature restaurant by Michael Anthony. When we programmed the hotel, I really wanted the restaurant to be a New York restaurant. We wanted it to be a New York institution.
Yeah.
It is the greatest of them all, and it is a New York hotel and the New York hotel, if anything, right? So whoever the chef partner was going to be for that particular restaurant had to be a real New York chef. But I also didn't want a chef that had outlets all over New York or all over the world for that matter. I wanted it to be a little bit more special because it deserved that.
Yeah.
Michael Anthony has been the chef of Gramercy Tavern for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And in that 30 years has had six James Beard, multiple Michelin stars.
Yeah.
It's his only restaurant.
Yeah.
And he's been in that kitchen that entire time.
Yeah.
So we were very fortunate, I think. And the New York food scene has agreed that we were able to bring him over. So that is, I think, that hotel is going to be incredibly special.
Yeah.
It was brought back to its original grandeur. It is a landmarked property in New York. And so all of the ceilings have been painstakingly refreshed back to their original state.
Yeah.
The clock, which was the very famous clock in the middle of Peacock Alley, people would always say, meet me at the clock.
Yeah.
The clock has been under refurbishment for the last 5 years, piece by piece.
Wow.
Stunning piece of architecture in that space. So we're obviously very excited about that. The Waldorf Astoria London is opening.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's something closer.
Something closer by. Waldorf Astoria London is coming by. We have some great partners there too that I am not going to talk about. Uh-huh. Amber.
See, Amber's exact. She stood up out of her chair.
She got out of her chair. Yeah, and my PR comms person keeping a close eye on me. We've just opened up the Waldorf Astoria Seychelles, Flat Island. An incredible property. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes a lot of cues from the Waldorf Astoria Maldives.
Yeah.
But again, a really rich, very storied food and beverage program. We have all of our own gardens and product on the island, really talented team, and just a really special place. Obviously, our Waldorf Astorias are, you know, at the top of our chain. And so we put a lot of love into that because they demand a very certain customer and a price
point. And I feel like that doesn't take away, and that's a conversation that happens a lot, obviously, in hospitality, is the fact that we're talking about the Waldorf Astoria now, that doesn't take away from the importance of a Hampton or a Doubletree by all means,
right?
Because, you know, there's profitability, and we've talked about this again, the dollar still matters. You know, that's the reality. And with a Hampton and a, you know, and a DoubleTree, there's owner relations there, and there's an entirely different pricing scheme, which is totally clear compared to a Waldorf, but there's a relevance just as much. So we're not
100%. Actually, you know, when I started with Hilton, I was very new to that side of the business. Yeah. I came from the independent restaurant space most of my life.
We'll get there, Mr. Puck.
And yes. Puck's pup, as they used to call me. When I started, I really took an appreciation and affinity towards Hampton specifically, because when you think about the programming of a Hampton, we have over 3,500 in the United States alone. We just opened up our 4,000th Hampton, I think. And when you think about running a program that many hotels, we launched a new seasonal waffle. We kind of doubled down on the waffle. Yeah. It's a very important
brand. The waffle
brand.
Is something we need to talk about.
Free waffles and Wi-Fi. Yeah. You know, that is one of the banner ads for every single Hampton. And people really resonated with the waffle. You know, we're the first brand to introduce the make your own on a hot iron with the batter. The kids and the families loved it. Mm. But we really never did much more with it beyond that.
Okay.
And so after COVID, we said, okay, let's think all these programs, let's focus on less is more, done better was the approach. Bring up the quality, tighten up the program, but then make them more interesting and see how we can have fun with them and make them unique. Yeah. And so we started doing seasonal flavored waffles.
Very cool.
I was at a coffee chain that everyone knows, and I don't drink these
for legal reasons. We can't say,
but you know, it was already September, and they had already started talking about this thing called pumpkin spice
latte.
And, I'm fresh off of Singapore after 10 years. I'm like, my gosh, they really are into this over here, right? And I said, gosh, you know what? We should have fun with pumpkin spice. What can we do? And I called Stuart, who works on our team, and we're going around, and he was like, how about we make a pumpkin spice waffle? And I'm like, ooh, I love that idea. Cool. Yeah. And it was the most social posted program of anything Hampton's ever done in its history. We broke our social media pages by introducing the pumpkin spice waffle. Mm-hmm. Well, that started a whole new thing. And then we had red velvet waffles and for Valentine's Day and so on it goes. It's a really brilliant thing to watch how you could do that and just with a flip of a switch. You could run that program across 3,600 plus hotels in one day. And so every single customer that day in that hotel is experiencing the exact same thing, which from a customer experience, consistency is key. And so, Hampton is a very powerful, powerful brand.
Let's talk about, before we come and talk about your career, Adam, let's talk about the waffle.
Yeah.
Would you, for those that have never heard about this whole waffle Hampton gig, would you in simple words, and I know there's no simple words for this, and then I have a follow-up question, but would you in simple words explain that with as much history of the waffle game as you have?
Well, first you start with flour and eggs.
That part we got. You need a batter. Yeah.
When we introduced Hampton, it originally started with, we're not going to do breakfast.
Yeah.
Then it was, well, we'll just do donuts. And that didn't work either. Mm-hmm. And so how do we take a brand that's focused service, trying to give our owners a lower end cost model?
More,
yet a great experience for our customers. So we introduced the first hot breakfast in a focus service hotel, was Hampton Inn. Mm. And we know that the American breakfast always entails some type of battered item, right? It's either pancakes or waffles. We like our carbs.
Yeah.
And the born was the waffle and the idea of doing a waffle, but not let's not just do a waffle. Mm. Let's do waffles that the customer can actually make themselves. Mm. And so we tested and tried, tested and learned, because we were putting a hot waffle iron in front of
everyone. Effectively,
some risk there that we had to make sure we were comfortable with. And again, it was wildly successful. Mm-hmm. You know, so many other brands and full service hotel chains now are doing the exact same thing. Yeah. But again, that stayed pretty static as this really delicious waffle with syrup and different toppings for decades. Yeah. And post-COVID, again, is when we really started to change the approach towards the waffle, make them interesting and different. They've done a very similar thing now with pancakes at True with the automatic pancake machine.
Yeah.
And so you'll have green pancakes on St. Patrick's Day. Yes.
Yes, we did. Very good. Adam, if I look at your career, and obviously, you know, the idea at Smack is also to talk about the person and not just about the brand. So I'll shift gears slightly and talk about you. You did some time with Wolfgang Puck. Mm-hmm. One, for those of us that are not that familiar with Haven Beer, we're one of the chefs in the U.S., to this day, restaurants across the country, you know, has done the Oscars and yada, yada, yada. So mm-hmm. there's a big. How does something like that prepare you? Does it, frankly, prepare you for, let's be honest, with all love to Hilton and Emma Banks and all the organizing team of this trade show, mm-hmm. but a fairly corporate environment mm-hmm. as Hilton is. And that's, you know, the same goes from Accor and Marriott and the others. But coming from something where I would imagine you have a little bit more freedom, a little bit of space to design and innovate, to a massive beast that is the corporate hotel world. How was that for you on a personal note? And what are some of the things where perhaps you might also see some similarities between Puck and Hilton?
Listen, I think my time with Wolfie was a time that enriched me with the art and understanding of hospitality.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I don't think that there's any other hospitality person in the industry like Wolf.
Yeah.
He taught his people, and he himself embodies just taking care of and just hosting people. He is the ultimate host. Yeah. And you go into any Puck restaurant anywhere in the world, and they truly take care of you. Mm. And further to that, what I also learned from him was how to build a brand.
Yeah.
How to build a brand, how to protect a brand, and how to drive consistency in that brand. Mm-hmm. You know, I worked on the development of Cut, which is the Michelin-starred steakhouse that we opened at the Four Seasons Beverly Wilshire. I took that concept to Las Vegas, to Singapore, to Dubai, to London, to Bahrain. You can go to any one of those cuts, and I would say 90% of that cut experience is identical.
Yeah.
The music, the lighting, the way the menu's designed, the artwork on the walls, but yet has enough of that local influence to ensure that it's speaking to that particular customer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, Cut in Singapore has nasi lemak type of snacks at the bar menu, right? We've infused some local flair and some flavor, but all in the style of Cut. So brand building, customer service, hospitality, and also the development of your team. Mm. I was incredibly fortunate working with him that all of the leaders that I worked underneath as a young Puck, or as I was, you know, they took me under their wing.
Yeah.
They taught me, they educated me, and they mentored me until I kind of made it to him. And then he did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And so what that instilled in me is that necessity as a leader in this industry to embrace young talent, to give them as much as they'll take, and to give them the opportunity to showcase what they've learned, allow them to grow and develop. Wolf always said to me, if I don't continue to open up restaurants, I'll lose all the good people and I won't give people chances. Mm. And that's why he built a bench. And so if you go to any Puck restaurant anywhere in the world, I would guess the average tenure is anywhere between 7 to 10 years. Mm. If you go to Spago Beverly Hills, the mothership, you know, Chef Ari's been there 35 years. Insane. And so that, all of those things, back to your original question, I think those were wildly important for the progression of my career, no matter where you go. Because yes, we're in a very big hotel organization with hundreds of thousands of team members in food and beverage alone around the globe. But it all starts at the top.
Yeah.
And if I can instill that with my team and we could instill that to our partners in the field and we could bring that every day when we show up, then hopefully they're doing the same.
That will transcend down.
I think it's a trickle down effect. And I just know from our team alone, you know, we have a super strong team. We're small but mighty, 20 plus people in food and beverage brands globally. Yeah. And they have all been with me since I started in the role 5 years ago, and almost all of them are new.
Yeah.
And so, and they've also had the opportunity to develop and to grow and to move up. And we need to, as we continue to grow, the beauty of that is we could do the same thing for them.
Sure.
But also taking those roots of branded concepts of service and hospitality, and making sure as we're writing and programming our briefs to deliver to our hotels and our concepts, that we're giving cues and nods to the operating teams on how to make sure that that comes to life.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And then how does something like where we are today, which is, as I mentioned, the Hilton Momoti in Istanbul, is a big food and drink conference here by led by the EMEA F&B team, and obviously Emma Banks leading the way strong as she does. Explain to me how an event, and we should say there's about, from what I've heard, 500 to 600 people, all including suppliers and F&B directors and chefs from your hotels in the EMEA region. How does something like that tie in? Where does the importance come to bring the people together? I heard in Emma's opening that, you know, this hasn't been done in a couple of years, so it's not something you guys have the luxury of doing on a regular basis. Yeah. So all the more importance to it, question mark?
Without question, not only for this, but for future ones, we hope as well.
Yeah.
You know, culture is at the root of a great team.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in the hospitality business. Oh, yeah. We're in the business of people serving people.
Yeah.
And we need to come together as those people to align on the strategy, align on the vision, align on what our cultural focus is for the organization, all of those priorities together. It's very challenging sometimes, especially as large as the organization is, as diverse as the region is, to get that message across succinctly. It's done sometimes in pockets and silos or over emails or one-on-ones. Yeah. But getting everybody together, you build the energy, you build the excitement, you get people reinvigorated for what's next, reinvigorated for being here at Hilton and being part of this incredible organization that really prioritizes our people, our customers, and our owners. Yeah. And if we do those three things right, we'll continue to have a really great business.
Speaking of the business, let's look ahead a little bit. Let's say 2, 3, maybe 5 years down the road. And this is a really broad question, so I hope no risk in Amber jumping at me. What are some things that we can expect, not necessarily just from Hilton, but what do you see are some things that are on the horizon? Mm-hmm. And we've talked a lot about F&B. I'll swing back to wellness in just a second for the last couple of minutes. But what are some of the things that you feel are going to come around in F&B kind of in the foreseeable 2 to 3 years? Is there anything that you guys are preparing for or that you can already see and are trying to adapt? And I'll exclude from your answer the whole idea that you've talked about already, which is that people are well-traveled now, probably going to continue to be well-traveled and carry their experiences from, you know, a trip to the Maldives into when they go out locally in London.
For all of those reasons, we launched our own creative agency within Hilton called Stir Creative Collective.
I've met the guys already.
You've met Fayez probably, right? Yeah. So stircreativecollective.com, easy plug. You could see what
we've
done.
We'll put the link in the description
there
below.
There you go. I love that. We saw the need to support our owners and our hotels maybe with a little bit more of a stronger position on food and beverage concepting, programming, strategy, because we're not only a management company, but we're also a franchisee, right? Sure. So in America, almost 90% of our hotels are owned by third-party and third-party management companies. Yeah. And so we needed to help them. But we found out that this necessity created and this product that we created a stronger team inside of our team at Hilton, which then started creating better products. And so we've decided to reposition ourselves within the organization. Mm-hmm. So Stir Creative Collective is just that. It is an agency of teams across the globe that deliver brand concepts, programs, market size, et cetera. And these are those market relevant concepts that we know are going to cut through the noise in a crowded space. We know that they're going to be successful, but more importantly, that there's not going to be just one of them. There's going to be multiple of the same concept across region. Again, kind of taking nods and cues from my Puck days, how do we build a concept and allow for it to grow across the region? And that will happen. And that's happening already in Europe. It's happening in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's moving into Asia Pacific by the end of this year. And so over the next few years, we'll have hundreds, if not thousands, of around 20 to 30 concepts we're going to launch for our full service lifestyle and luxury brands.
When we think of wellness, and we've talked about this a little bit already, the idea of well-being, obviously everybody, you know, likes a good beachfront, likes a nice pool, and, you know, most people will likely agree on that. Can you talk to me a little bit more about some of the things that you mentioned that you have seen that are contributing to wellness? You talked about mental well-being, mm-hmm. the whole idea of meditation. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you are seeing there? And are you seeing this more dominantly in some parts of the world and perhaps less so in others? So is the European traveler a little bit more affluent to that? Is it the Americans? Is it perhaps the Asians, the Chinese? Is it the guys from the Middle East? Where are you seeing these influences?
Predominantly, I would say, in the Americas in major cities. In, you know, tertiary markets in mainland China, as an example, we don't really see that kind of customer demand yet. Yeah. Lifestyles are somewhat different. But in the major markets, Shanghai, Beijing, Taiwan, Hong Kong, and Guangzhou, like these markets demand for it just like the rest of the globe. Okay. And what we're seeing is that mental well-being, meditation, mm-hmm. huge. The opportunity to wind down at the end of your day. Yeah. And so, you know, using the opportunity to work with great partners like Calm that have great meditation programs that we could layer into our technology and our connected room TV. It's already started. We think it's going to be wildly successful. Peloton for people who want to be able to. Some people don't necessarily feel very comfortable going to the gym in the morning, especially if you're on a conference with colleagues from work. Some people don't feel comfortable in that space. They prefer to still have their routine, but how are we able to do that? We've launched Peloton in the United States. We have it in London and in Germany. We have a Peloton bike in every single Hilton hotel in the United States. And now we have it in our connected room. Mm-hmm. And we're going to launch that again in those markets. And we'll look for other partners in other markets to ensure that we have consistency in that experience for our guests. And the other part about wellness that we see a demand for is richer spa and fitness experiences. Okay. So a spa experience that, again, almost taking cues from the way that we approach a food and beverage concept, a spa that has a full story behind it, a narrative that threads through everything from the way the guests and the staff engage with you to the types of products and services that they offer to the design of the space to the service rituals and moments that when you go to a Waldorf Astoria spa, there's something about it that just makes it very, very different and unique and has a brandable position in the marketplace. And so we're going to reconcept all of our spa programs for Hilton, Waldorf, and Conrad. And then we're equally going to redesign the future of fitness centers. And so if you think about someone who actively likes to go to the gym, like I do, you want to go to an environment. You like to go to an environment where you feel really comfortable doing what you need to do in a gym.
Yeah.
And I think we are like many other hotel companies. I think that this is pretty much a general statement that applies to all. Most gyms in most hotels across all brands are white walls with a water station.
Yeah. And the little, remember the, you know, the little paper cup?
The little cone.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes. We could do better than that. Mm-hmm. Actually, we know that we can. And so we're well underway right now in the development of a fitness center that can still feel luxurious in the luxury segment, can still feel appropriate if you're at a Hampton. But no matter where you go in the chain scale, you're going to walk into one of those gyms and you're going to want to work out. You're going to feel really good about it. And I'll just leave it at that because I don't give away all the dirty details.
What very few people about you know about you probably is that you're with the CIA.
I am.
In one capacity or another. But obviously, good news, it's not the spies, it's actually the culinary guys, which is the Culinary Institute of America. And I know, and I've kind of, obviously, we do some research on the people that come on the show on a good day. Today was a good day. And we spoke to some people, in the Hilton space beforehand as well and asked about, you know, tried to find out some of the things that are dear to your heart beyond Hilton. And one of the things that we did find was precisely the whole idea of the Culinary Institute, or frankly, any form of, you know, bringing the next gen closer perhaps to this industry, to culinary experiences and so on and so forth. That seems to be also, judging by your LinkedIn feed, if you don't mind me saying so, that seems to be something that is close to your heart every here and there. Talk me through that, because there's this conception of, and you've just mentioned earlier, some of the coming generations, whether it's Alpha, you know, Generation Z, Millennials, whatever. There's this conception of hospitality that it's incredibly hard work. Mostly true, let's be honest, largely true, especially if you're on the front line with guests, with average pay at best, excluding tips. And there's this nudge that you have to be built for hospitality. Now, clearly, most of us that are, you know, working in hospitality have some form of craziness in us that we love people and it's great to meet new faces and so on and so forth. How do you see that progressing? Perhaps also speaking from the experience that you have with the Institute.
Yeah, you know, listen, I think one, the Culinary Institute of America is the best institution in the world, probably, for culinary arts, because it doesn't just address the idea of cooking. Mm-hmm. It addresses the concept of you owning your own restaurant, running your own business.
Yeah.
You can now go to the Culinary Institute of America and specialize in social media for food, for food PR and communications, for wine, for the crafting of beer. So there's all these different disciplines.
Yeah.
They've evolved tremendously to ensure that we're meeting the needs of this ever-evolving industry. You know, at one point it was just cooks. When you left the Culinary Institute of America, when I did, a long time ago, I'm not going to say too much more about that. It was a long time ago.
Five years at best.
You could be a chef or a sous chef or a banquet chef in a hotel. And if you were going to the front of the house, which many of us back then did not, you were going to be a restaurant manager, a banquet manager, and maybe a wine sommelier. That was kind of it.
Yeah.
Now, the list of choices of what you could do and what happened, I think, you know, for me, what I've seen and how my career and staying connected to the school as the industry evolved and I evolved and my thinking evolved into what I wanted to do, those options became present for me.
Yeah.
And I had the foundation of an education from that school to be able to do anything I wanted to do, actually. So they have continued to evolve, continued to met the business where it needs to be. But I think students going there now, the industry hasn't changed to the point where you don't need to do your time. Hmm. It's still an industry where you need to do your time. You need to put in that work. You need to do the hustle, as we say, in Hilton speak. And it's important in this industry to have to go through that process. It's, dare I say, a rite of passage.
Yeah.
You have to be able to understand what, if you want to become a leader, you have to understand what every single position goes through. You have to understand what their life is like. You have to understand when they get on the floor and they're working a 12-hour shift and they're on their feet and they're waiting tables and they're taking care of guests. You have to be able to ensure you could support them, that you could look for ways to continue to make their job better, to be able to ensure you're giving the best level of experience, and so on it goes. And that goes for every single level. So, I mean, listen, when I was in high school, I started when I was 16 years old, I got a full-time job in a restaurant. I worked full-time throughout all of high school. Mm. I went on a very conventional track to normal college, if you will, normal college.
Yeah.
I didn't really want to. I was kind of forced the hand. So I dropped out and I put myself through the Culinary Institute of America.
Yeah.
And I went to, I worked full-time from that. But I missed up until I joined Capella Hotels and Resorts in 2018. I missed almost every single Christmas, New Year's, birthdays, anniversaries, weddings. And that's a fact. But that was a commitment that I made. And so that commitment to the industry, if you're committed and you're really committed to this industry, the world is your oyster, and the benefits are really large. And but you got to love the business. You got to love the business of people taking care of people. You got to love hospitality at the core of what we do. Because if that is your guiding light, then everything else should speak to that and should work towards that to make sure it's good for the guest and good for the people that are working for you. It'll then be good for everybody else that invests in your business. And the Culinary Institute of America, back to that, I mean, they, again, have continued to meet the industry where it is.
Yeah.
They're continuing to evolve. We have a brand new president there, Michael Bakker. He was with Google and was in charge of their global food service. So he's coming to, he's coming to the institution. And I was, as part of the board of trustees, I was part of the hiring for that position. And he's coming to the school with this fresh new perspective, living and breathing the world of technology for so many years. Yeah. And how is that going to now play into what we do at the school, which I think is only going to continue to keep us relevant. But we'd love to have you come to the CIA and do a Smack Live with Michael. I think the students would also equally love watching it.
Yeah, that would probably be a lot of fun. And we have done that at other hotels, because as I mentioned to you earlier. Adam, just like that, 47 minutes are gone. We have a tradition here on Smack where we end with a couple of quick and dirty questions at the end. I will give you some thinking space, because some of them are tough. Mm. So we'll see how you do. So I'll give you 5 questions. Your favorite hotel outside of the Hilton World?
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm here for the dirty. I'm here for the dirty ones now. Yeah.
That question. That is, first of all, that's an for me, as someone who loves to travel, and when I'm not working, my wife and I travel. That's all we do. And I would say, most recently, the Capella Hotel in Sydney, Australia. Okay. We spent 3 weeks there Christmas last year. Brilliant.
Very good.
The Chatham Bars in Chatham, Massachusetts.
Okay.
When I went there, I brought my wife, who'd never been to the Cape before, and I said, this feels like the quintessential New England holiday. Mm. And now their website says a quintessential New England holiday. So that is, those two hotels, I think, will always be special to both of us.
Yeah.
But they also really represent and appeal to the customer exactly the way they should be.
Very cool. A guy that is well-traveled like you, give me a country, city, region, space on the planet that gets far too little appreciation for its beauty.
Far too little appreciation for its beauty.
Give me a hidden gem.
You know, I think people always talk about Sydney, but they don't talk about the rest of Australia very much. You hear Melbourne and Sydney, and Sydney. Western Australia, or WA, as they like to say, is brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely stunning shoreline, beautiful vineyards in Margaret River. You know, again, we spent so much time down there. An easy place to go for respite, enjoying great food, incredible culinary arts, great wine, beautiful shoreline, gorgeous beaches. Watch out for the sharks. But an incredible part of the world that I think definitely is kind of a sleeper also, because it's quite far.
It's a bit of a trek. Yeah. Here's a real bummer. The person with the best style in your team.
Ooh.
And we're excluding Amber from this, because Amber clearly rocks the world, and I've met Amber now. So
person with the best.
Who's got the best style in the team?
Oh, God, that is a hard question. Very unique.
Yeah. Who comes to mind? Who on a call? Never rocks up in the PJs, but is always right there with it.
Well, style comes in different shapes and sizes, right? So there's a gentleman on my team named George, who's a very lifestyle kind of guy, and he fits that. The space to a T.
Okay.
Zara on my team in Asia Pacific.
Yeah.
Every time she shows up, she is dressed to the nines, and her handbag collection definitely surpasses my wife's.
Okay.
That's a fact.
Okay. All right. Very good. Congratulations, Zara and George.
Yeah. There you go. I'll leave it at that.
final question. If there's one thing that you could change about hospitality, what would it be?
That I think more people outside of the industry understood what this industry does and what our people do to provide the type of services that we do for those guest experiences, because it's a really tough industry. Yeah. And unless you're in it, you sometimes just don't realize what it takes to do what we do. And more the reason why I love it so much, because I did come from it. Yeah. I was in it my whole life.
Yeah.
And you look at the people around you every day, and you feel like you're it's part of your extended family, because we're all in it together. And I don't think a lot of people realize how hard it really is.
Yeah, I know, it's difficult. It's tough. Adam, that was a breath of fresh air. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
On to shower and suits, and I'll see you at the gala.
Yeah, suited and booted.
In a couple of minutes. Thank you for your time. I hope to see you again, and we'll take you up on that offer for the CIA.
Let's do the CIA.
Whenever it comes around.
We have a nice campus in Napa, too, by the way, if you want to diversify your U.S. visit.
Do the Smack Live there. Thanks very much, Adam. Thank you. That's it for this episode, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to share your thoughts on this episode and everything else that is going on at Smack with us by checking out our website at smack.media, or connect with us on LinkedIn, YouTube, or Instagram. We'll see you next time.